This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for tuning in. In 2005, Marquette University established the George Coyne Lecture Series on Astronomy and Astrophysics. Each year since then, the university invites a distinguished speaker to campus to deliver a talk. And every year, Lake Effect has interviewed those speakers, beginning with Father Coyne himself in 2006. Last September, that speaker was Harvey Tannenbaum. Dr. Tannenbaum is the director of NASA's Chandra X-ray Observatory at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics in Boston. He received his degrees from Yale and MIT and has been awarded the NASA Medals for Exceptional Scientific Achievement and also for Outstanding Leadership. In 2005, he was elected to the National Academy of Science. It's considered to be one of the highest honors awarded to a U.S. scientist. He joined me in the studio in September. Dr. Tannenbaum, welcome to Lake Effect, and thanks so much for joining us.
It's delightful for me to be here.
The Chandra X-ray telescope was actually something that you started. You were somebody who put the initial bug in the ear of NASA. Is that correct?
Yeah, the actual idea goes actually into the early 1960s when the first X-ray sources were discovered, and Riccardo Jucconi, who led the team and actually received the Nobel Prize in Physics in 2002, a year after the first discoveries, talked about a telescope with properties quite similar to Chandra. But it was about 15 years later when he and I together wrote a proposal to NASA saying it's time to really get going on this project. And so in 1976 is when the work which led to what is now Chandra actually got started formally.
So for those of us who don't know what the differences in telescopes are, obviously it's looking at X-rays, but what does an X-ray telescope do and what do you see that you don't see with other telescopes?
Yeah, the astronomical objects, stars, galaxies, almost everything that's out there can put out its energy in various different forms, running all the way from the radio through the infrared, optical, things we see with our eyes. Infrared relates to heat, for example. Then X-rays, things that are very hot, and gamma rays where even more energetic events are going on. And we call that span from the radio to the gamma rays the electromagnetic spectrum. And we've realized over the past few decades, if you want to really understand what's going on in a star or a galaxy, you really need to cover it with all the different kinds of telescopes. It's not enough just to look with your eye. In fact, your eye can't see most of what's coming in, both because of the wavelengths that the eye is tuned to, but also the atmosphere on the Earth. We have to get up into space to do infrared, to do X-rays, to do gamma rays. We can do optical and radio from the ground, but all the other parts of the spectrum, we have to get up into space. And so in the X-ray part of the band where Chandra's tuned is really looking at very hot and energetic events. So we often talk about stellar explosions and collisions, places where what we call cosmic violence is the catchword, and things that are very energetic. They're very hot. They may have very strong forces of gravity, very strong magnetic fields, and those are the kinds of conditions that can produce X-rays in reasonably large amounts. In order to detect the X-rays, we need a very different kind of telescope. And so this is not like going to the doctor's office where there's a machine that produces X-rays, shoots the X-rays through your arm, and then the bones sort of absorb some of the X-rays, and used to be film, and now, of course, it's CCD detectors, right?
Yeah.
See the shadows that the bones create. That's not what we're doing. It's just very similar to what people are used to thinking of when they think of a telescope. So there's a set of mirrors, and they're collecting light, but light in the form of X-rays that are coming from stars and galaxies that are out there in space. So the telescope focuses, it makes a picture, an image, and that comes onto an electronic detector. We have CCD detectors and what are called microchannel plate detectors, but they're ways of converting the X-rays into digital signals that we can then send back down to the ground and figure out what the image looks like by putting it all back together on the ground.
And then, of course, figuring out what it's telling us about the universe.
Sure. So, yeah. I mean, we look at the picture itself. Does it look like a pinpoint? Does it look like it has fuzz around it? How extended might it be? We can measure the energy of the X-rays so we can tell if it's very hot or just on the edge of being hot enough to make X-rays. We can look for signatures in the X-ray spectrum, which is the energy distribution, to tell us how much of the various different heavier elements are present, how much oxygen, how much hydrogen, how much iron, for example. It turns out that stars are factories where a lot of iron gets produced, and we want to know how much iron is produced by different kinds of stellar factories, and then eventually how it gets to form into new stars and planets like our own solar system and Earth.
So what is Chandra focusing on? What are the specific missions that are going on right now?
What's beautiful about Chandra is that it's an observatory, which means it can do all sorts of science. It does things that it was originally designed to do, and it's doing all sorts of things that have been discovered since the 70s and 80s and 90s when we were designing it and building it, and even since 2000 when the first science was being done. It's open to scientists all over the world, and people propose once a year, and they send in their best ideas. We get 600 or 700 proposals. We can pick about 175 or 80 of them just based on the limited amount of time that's available. So we are studying stars. We're studying supernova explosions, stars that can no longer hold their act together and blow up. We're studying galaxies that bump into each other and collide. We're studying the hot gas that fills the space in between galaxies that are out there. We're studying black holes in the centers of galaxies where material falls towards the black hole, gets pulled so hard by the gravitational forces of the black hole that it gets accelerated to very high speeds, and a lot of energy is released, and most of that energy comes out in the form of X-rays. And then there are things like dark matter and dark energy.
So it sounds like Chandra has a huge amount to do and a huge amount to offer scientists here. How is it holding up? It's been in space for a little while, and it's been working for quite some time.
Right. So it's actually, of course, more than a little while. Chandra was launched in summer of 1999. So we've passed the 14-year milestone. It's interesting. Those of us who were in on the ground floor and helped design it and build it, if you ask us how long is expected to last, depending on who you ask or the day of the week you ask, you'll get a range of answers. I would have always said that it was designed to have a 5-year life in space. And anything that you could run out of, like fuel or power, those systems were designed to have at least double so that they would last at least 10 years. When we went back and actually looked at the details when we were having this discussion, we realized that when we were designing and building in the 80s and 90s, most of the electronic components that were being used in the spacecraft in those days had only been what's called qualified. They've been tested under very hard conditions on the ground, and they were certified that they were going to work at least 3 years. So to keep the costs manageable, we designed it with those kinds of parts which already were available and existed. So technically, the design life was 3 years for all of the components. We fully expected them to work longer than the 3 years. We hoped that everything would work for 5 years, and of course now we're at three times that. And being so excited about the results and maybe being optimists, we actually do a study every 5 years or so. The team from what was TRW that had built the spacecraft and is now part of Northrop Grumman, they do a study to see what's wearing out, what problems we might be facing. And there are a few challenges, but by and large, things are working close to the way they were designed and how they worked when we first launched. So the most recent study is there's what we call no showstoppers, which means there's nothing which is imminently in danger of failing that would preclude us from going 20 years. And they're actually currently doing a look at 25 to 30 years for us.
Which is quite a substantial amount more than you ever expected.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And because of a bunch of conditions, many of which we don't completely control, the next X-ray telescope, which we can imagine eventually succeeding Chandra, is certainly not going to launch before the end of the 2020s. And even then, it will take a lot of good fortune and hard work to get there. So the fact that Chandra is the only X-ray telescope that has this kind of what we call angular resolution, the ability to take pictures as sharp as the pictures we take, the fact that it's still 15 years after launch, the request to use it outpace the available time by a factor between 5 and 6 to 1 every single year when we get the proposals in. We're not running out of ideas. We're not running out of discoveries. And it's totally reasonable to expect if it continues to work at something close to the current levels that we would actually use it for something like 30 years.
Well, let's hope.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Well,
we do. We do hope, and we also work very hard. We have a great team that keeps a really close eye on things. If they see anything that needs extra attention, we're very, very careful. It's like handling our baby, and we take very good care of it.
You say that the next possible X-ray telescope might not happen until the 2030s. If you were designing it today, what would you change?
So there will be X-ray telescopes between now and 2030 besides Chandra. Some will be smaller. Some will be very specialized to do one particular area of science. But on the drawing boards and being worked today in the sense of something that could fly in the next few years, there's nothing that has comparable angular resolution. So the ability to take these pictures and have the sensitivity and the ability to distinguish very fine features that Chandra has. So what we will do differently, partly keeping in mind that still higher angular resolution, still even better pictures would be very challenging and very expensive. What we've been focusing on is to build something which will take pictures comparable to those that Chandra can take, but with 30 to 100 times the collecting area, bigger, and ability to see fainter objects, more distant objects, to collect more X-rays and be able to analyze the energy content in much, much greater detail. And we basically are working on ideas of how to make a telescope that weighs no more than Chandra, costs no more, and somehow will deliver between 30 and 100 times more X-rays down to the detectors. So, of course, to do that, we have to make the pieces, which Chandra's made out of glass that's an inch thick, the different parts of the mirror. We're talking about making things that are 0.4 millimeter thick, so about 50 times thinner. So if you imagine that if you make it 50 times thinner, you could get for the same mass about 50 times the collecting area. And we're working in the lab, and we're making very good progress at demonstrating the technology to do this kind of work.
Without the shuttles, though, would it be launched on a rocket?
Yeah, it will be launched on a rocket. It could fit on what is already available, either an Atlas V rocket that exists and is launching things. I don't know that it'll be launching things in, say, 2030, but there's a chance. And there's also a bunch of entrants into the commercial development. And there's a Falcon 9 Heavy that has all the capability to launch. In fact, it will cost substantially less to launch Chandra on an unmanned rocket than it did cost on the shuttle. One of the things that's really interesting about Chandra is that it's in this high Earth orbit, which means that every couple of days it goes to a distance that's the equivalent of a third of the way out to the moon. Of course, not always in the direction of the moon, but that's how far out from the Earth it gets, and it comes back down. And it's above the radiation belts of the Earth about 80% of the time, which means we can look at the sky a good fraction of the time. When we're in the radiation belts, there's too much noise and background, and our detectors basically can't see anything. But the other thing is because it's not going around the Earth in low orbit, a satellite that goes around the Earth like the space station, like the shuttle, and even like Hubble, it goes from light to dark 15 times a day. It goes from being in sunlight and it's getting power from the sun and the sun's heating it up, and then it goes into the backside of the Earth and the sun is blocked and it has to run off its batteries. Its temperatures cycle up and down. Everything is mechanically and thermally being stressed 15 times a day. So there's a lot more wear and tear. Chandra doesn't have that. It goes out in this high orbit. When it comes down close to the Earth, occasionally the sun gets shattered for 10 or 15 minutes, but very infrequently, and it doesn't have the same stress. So once you build it and put it in this high orbit, you can't service it. It never gets close enough to the Earth to go up and fix anything. So even if we had the shuttle, and even if we had spare parts, there's no way to really rendezvous and put them in. But because it's in this orbit where there's much less stress on it, once you get there, it really turns out that there's a much better chance that it'll work a much longer time than you'd originally thought.
As it's been proven.
As it's been proven.
Right.
So it's a very cost-effective way. It has a little bit more risk associated at the front end, and everything has to work just as you've designed it. But once you get out there, and once everything's working, this possibility of a 10, 15, 20, and maybe even 30-year life is not just a dream. It's actually potentially a reality.
And, of course, it's just bringing back all of that wonderful information that helps us understand our universe.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Tannenbaum, I can't thank you enough for coming in and talking this morning. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. It's always fun for me to have a chance to talk about Chandra.
Dr. Harvey Tannenbaum is the director of NASA's Chandra X-ray Observatory. It's located at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics in Boston. Dr. Tannenbaum delivered the COIN Lecture in Astronomy and Physics at Marquette University last fall, and we spoke with him then. Well, the Chandra telescope isn't the only one gathering data. Later this spring, our own astronomy contributor, Jean Creighton, will have the chance to add to the body of scientific knowledge. We'll hear about her once-in-a-lifetime trip when Lake Effect returns on WUWM.